Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Susan, and it's good to be here for the second week of our fun drive. I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe that Local Talk and everything that KHOI does enriches our listeners out there.
Yes, at a time when there's so much distrust of media, we need to hear the voices of local people we know and trust. We may not always agree with them, but we know where they're coming from. And we know that none of our volunteers are motivated by money.
Well, this is really what non-commercial means, I guess. So if you share our concerns out there, please join us by becoming a member at $55 per year or increasing your membership to sustainer level, $20 a month or more. You can call us at 515-292-2878 after 9 a.m. or text us at 515-200-7758. The best way to donate and celebrate with us is to come down to the Pantorium tonight. We're right across from the Octagon at 7 p.m. when the Barn Owl Band will be broadcasting live. And we did their preview last week on the show, and I think that will be a terrific event tonight. It's free, but don't overlook the big glass jar. That's for free will offerings for KHOI.
Or your membership check. But now for Radio for Everyone special. This is Radio for Everyone, wherever you are. And we're starting off with Chris McClure, whose wife Cynthia is our engineer today. Welcome, Chris. Cynthia told us that you listened to KHOI when you were deployed in the Middle East last year.
Oh, that's right. I was with the Army Reserve, and I was stationed in Kuwait. And there were a couple of times when I went to the KHOI website and was able to listen to a couple of different programs, including our Local Talk, as well as Democracy Now! So it was nice to know that there was a place to go to, you know, get a different spin on things and a more balanced coverage of the events of the day.
Well, now, Chris, you know, this is the modern world. Here you are overseas, and you can hear KHOI, our broadcast area. Of course, it's limited. The broadcast areas of all broadcast stations have a limited radius. I know that when I drive to Des Moines, I start to lose us around Ankeny, and maybe we get up to Webster City. I'm not sure how far east and west we go, but every broadcast station has a limited area. But in today's technology, we're available all over the globe. And, you know, I'm sort of a World War II historian. There's an account by one soldier whose unit moved frequently, and he got his Christmas packages in May. And mail
was
slow.
Yeah.
And here we are. You've been in touch with Cynthia, your wife, and
yes,
people back here by phone. Explain how you got KHOI so far away.
It's over the magic of the internet, and it's just a matter of going to the website, khoifm.org.
Yes, yeah. khoifm.org. Just
yes.
Same one that you go when you donate.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely.
The multipurpose website.
So, and with today's technology, you know, actually it's been 2 years now. My, how time has flown. But I was able to stay in contact with Cynthia every day, sometimes multiple times a day. Somehow, you know, either FaceTime or Skype or simply a phone call or just a text message. There were some really remote places that I was at, but even no matter how remote, I was still managed to get a weak cell signal to at least send a text.
Yeah, it's a wonderful technology we have today. And once again, going back to all histories of war, look at the long separations where people came home and hadn't even seen a picture or anything of a child who's been born in their absence. And it's just marvelous that we have that today. So when you're deployed overseas, and there have been very frequent deployments, you know, for National Guard units and
yes,
for regular Army, but basically you're still in touch with home. And, you know, when you listen to things at KHOI, you're hearing all the stuff that's part of our environment where you live, and you're taking it with you overseas. It's a marvelous thing. I was born far too early.
By the way, I understood that you were listening to Democracy Now. Why did you pick that?
Well, overseas in the military environment, the predominant news source was Fox News. And I try to take my news from a variety of news sources so that I can have an expansive point of view and consideration of the events of the day.
Yeah, that's a good thing for everybody to look at, because I get my news from, the network news, Iowa Public Television and Radio, and the BBC. And I figure, well, that's pretty good rendition of what's going on in the world, and a lot of different outlets. And also Reuters is a great news organization. So, you know, a good citizen, I think, takes their news from a variety of sources and really doesn't give a lot of credibility to the news on Facebook. You know, anyone can put anything up on Facebook. But I really appreciate your service, and having been in the Army Reserve here in Ames for 6 years, I understand the military commitment. We're very proud that at Camp McCoy, Wisconsin, we defeated a five-man unit of Green Berets from Chicago. So every summer we had 2 weeks at Camp McCoy playing Army, and it was great fun.
It was not so much fun when you go to the real zone, right?
If you're in an office, it might be better, but who knows?
Well, yeah, in other environments, they have their own challenges, including sniping and behind-the-back sort of attacks and throwing each other under the bus, and sometimes I'd rather take real bullets.
Yeah, you're never really safe in that environment.
You were a paymaster, weren't you?
Well, I was the commander of the 376th Financial Management Support Unit. That was my last assignment. I was their commander for about 4 years. And I retired from the Army Reserve in December of 2017.
So you handled the money. Everyone treated you properly.
That's right. When it comes to being paid on time, having the correct supplies, getting food, the infantry and the other combat arms people treated us rather well.
I would think so, yes. It's a great deal of responsibility you had. And it's so nice to know that you were listening to KHOI way over there. We were in Kuwait, is that right?
Well, I was based in Kuwait, but because I had subordinate units all over the Middle East, I was on the road quite a lot.
So you saw a lot of installations in the Middle East and traveled a lot.
Yes.
Well, today we also have Mary Howard to tell us another international listening story. First, I'd like to introduce Mary to you. Mary is co-producer with Mary Richards of Community Bookshelf. So you may have heard her reading. Mary, what can you tell us about your experience or what your knowledge of KHOI being heard far afield?
Well, this is kind of a personal story. My sister, Kathy, lives in Spokane, Washington. And 3 or 4 years ago, she was in Ukraine. She had a semester at the Catholic University of Ukraine in Lviv. That's how she pronounced it, so that's how I pronounce it, which is in the western part of Ukraine. She was there lecturing, and she had rather austere accommodations. She had a room, and she learned enough of the language to be able to go out and buy food for herself. And we were in touch by email, of course. And I could tell that she was kind of lonely in the evenings. She was away from her husband for a semester, and she was on her own in the evenings. Quite adventurous just to be there. I had a huge perennial garden at the time. I sent her a video of my garden. And then it occurred to me, I had recorded one of my own novels for the bookshelf, and it was about to be broadcast. And I thought, I bet she could get that on the archive in Ukraine. Why not? Well, of course she could. And so she began listening to it of an evening, sometimes looking at the perennial garden. And that was nice. My sister and I are very different. We have very different lives. I'm here in Ames volunteering at KHOI, writing novels and my own secular humanist kind of life. And we're very close. We love each other. We don't see each other that often. But it was just a nice idea, and I was so glad it worked out so well.
That was really fun, right?
Well, it was, yeah, for her to be able to hear me reading my own words, which that's the only time I've recorded my own novel.
So is she a fair critic? Does she give you feedback on how that could have been done?
She's
better?
Just totally positive.
She must be a loyal sister.
Yeah, but I have a question about the archives for Community Bookshelf.
Yes.
Are those available online? So if there's, could we now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, first of all, the program is broadcast Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and then it's rebroadcast at 8 o'clock on those days. And I myself listen to KHOI programs on the archive more often than on the radio, because often something I want to listen to just doesn't fit with the time that I have. Science Bites, for example, is Tuesday at 4:30, and I'm always doing something else, but I can get on the archive. And I follow our own program on the archive sometimes. Or if I've recorded something and I want to critique how it sounds, which is pretty important, especially when you're a volunteer, not really a professional, I try to do it as well as I can. But I listen critically to myself. So the archive, yes, right away can be listened to. And I'm recording, we are recording fiction and poetry for the bookshelf. And if you're listening to it and all of a sudden you miss a day and you're missing part of the plot, that's kind of frustrating. So you can get on the archive and pick up what you missed.
So I really like that, because I come from the old radio days where everything was so ethereal. You know, you're on the microphone, you're doing programming, and it goes out there and it's gone.
Right.
But in the modern age, it's in the archives. Mm-hmm. And so you can fetch anything you want that's ever been done on KHOI, locally produced. And that's pretty marvelous that we have that technology. And, of course, Chris, who was just here, was able to bring us up over there in Kuwait in the Middle East. And your sister, where she was in the Ukraine, that's just a marvelous thing. And just explain, now to explain how that's done, you get on the KHOI website, khoifm.org, and you go to archives. Am
right.
I correct?
Right.
That's
and
right.
You can just find virtually anything you want to fetch back. And if you missed that or if you have a schedule problem,
right.
You can get it and play it over the Internet. That's
it's very easy to use because all the programs are there. And, for example, Community Bookshelf, Tuesday, March something or other, at a certain time, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, that's how you know you're getting the right one. Just click on it, and up it comes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, there are different ways to get different programs. And, for example, I often want to listen to Local Talk comes on at 7 o'clock, and a lot of times I'm not up at 7, so I want to listen to it at 8. And
sure.
You can literally you can go into the black megaphone
right.
Click, and then you can hear what's on the air now, or you can go down their list and get anything for the past 2 weeks in order.
Right.
And then there's another place at the top for people who are savvy with websites. And I must admit, I was a little slow at first, but now I know
exactly.
Well,
you can do a search. We can do a search for certain programs.
There are two places you can get it. One for recent programs, and then the really important one that you're talking about is how you can listen to a whole book that's been was played a year ago or more. And that is people are getting a lot for their money or not.
Well, you also might mention, Mary, Community Bookshelf itself, what time it's on and who does the reading and all that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, Mary Richards and I are producing the show. She's doing most of the producing. She
now, Mary Richards, I thought she worked at that radio station or the TV station in the 70s. That's Mary Tyler Moore's character, Mary Richards. So then you're on the air reading books, and you do it fine, right?
Do it fine?
You do it fine.
I do it my best. I'm one of the many readers. We have a number of volunteer readers. Once in a while, someone reads their own work, and most of the time we're reading someone else's work. But I should say that the work that we were reading, the nonfiction, fiction, once in a while poetry, is work written by people who live in the KHOI listening area.
That's great, yeah.
And the readers, of course, are from here. We can come in and into the studio and record. And it is 1 o'clock Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for half an hour at 1 o'clock, again at 8 o'clock in the evening. So it's those 3 days a week.
That's terrific. Community Bookshelf. And, you know, every Christmas I listen to Doug Brown doing a Christmas carol.
Yes.
On the public
it's
radio.
It's a classic. Yeah.
I just have to do that as part of Christmas. And, you know, we really enjoyed these stories today about getting KHOI far away, Ukraine and the Middle East. But how can you listen without a radio? Well, that's how you do it. I don't think I could do it because I don't have a smartphone or a home computer at the farm.
Well, you're right. You couldn't hear it from your farmhouse without a radio. You're just lucky that you live near our tower in Story City. But for people who do have Wi-Fi on their phones and computers, it's really easy to hear any program from our archives, as we've been describing different ways you can do that. And just type in KHOIFM.org and click on the black megaphone. And there you'll get a colorful screen. There's another way you can see local talks. You'll get a colorful screen that gives you a choice of listening to what's on the air right now. Okay, that's the megaphone. But recent local talk shows are on our website with a picture and a short description. Check it out. And don't forget to look for the yellow donate button while you're there. Oh, Willow, you get a lot of for your money at KHOI, whether it's tuning into 89.1 FM from your car or your kitchen, or going to KHOIFM.org on your computer or smartphone. At 7 o'clock tonight, we have the Barn Owl Band playing live for one of our four Pentorium sessions.
And a party afterwards with pie. Now, Susan, are you going to make a pie?
Yes, I am. French apple.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you just heard a selection from a live recording of a concert from the Barn Owl Band, which is playing at the Pantorium session tonight right here at KHOI Studios. We're right across from the Octagon in downtown Ames. Well, what more do we have to show that KHOI is radio for everyone, Susan?
We'd like to have some crossover between our shows, just as we did with Mary Howard a minute ago. So Lana Noctegal and Donna Prisgintis came to tell us about Donalata Kitchen's international connections. We have here with us at KHOI an international food show. I'm not sure everyone knows that, but we have Lana Noctegal and Donna Prisgintis with us to tell first about how they won an international award for Donalata Kitchen.
Well, I don't know how international we are, but we're all in this together, so I figure the world is our kitchen, right? We can do that.
Everywhere is local somewhere.
Right. We love to talk about local food, and we have lots of guests on who talk about local food.
Their local food,
which makes it international food. I want to mention the award that we got back when we actually were pretty new at this game here. We sent a couple of programs into the World Association of Community Broadcasters, who had a contest going on in collaboration with the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations. They were looking for food programs, radio around the world. And my goodness, in 2017 and 2015, we got a bit of an award there for two things. Recognized by the United Nations as having something good to listen to. They were for two programs, the Carrot King and the Year of the Soil. So there you go.
Right. So two years running, we won this award.
Yeah.
And it was kind of fun to be honored.
Yeah. It's kind of, and actually listening to other people around the world, community radio is around the world. And lot of people are talking about their local communities and their local food. So it was nice to be part of that organization.
What are some of the guests that you've had here in Ames who talked about their local foods?
Oh, for goodness sakes. We had a nice person named Bashak.
Yes, Bashak is Turkish, and she talked about her traditions. We also had an Indian woman, Radhika Boudoir, who talked about Indian traditions. I think Ann Kinzel talked about French traditions.
Oh, a fine show on Champagne. Actually, a volunteer here at the studio, I talked about his food traditions. It's nice not to just talk about it, but I've had some of his food too. Gio.
Oh, right. He's Georgian, as in the country, Georgia.
Gio Chalatse. And he talked about a really interesting thing that Georgia does. They are the center of fruit trees and wine. For thousands of years, they've been doing this thing over there. So naturally, they have wonderful things to do. And one time, we got together in his kitchen for a traditional Georgian fruit treat, grape thing, a way to preserve grapes. They make a thing called churchella. And you got
a huh
in there. Churchella. It's kind of like grapes and walnuts on a stick.
You take a thread and you thread a bunch of walnut pieces, and then he pressed the local grape juice, so it was fresh grape juice, and then you mix it with some flour, and then you boil it, and then you dip the stringed walnuts together and dip them in the grapes. There we go.
They do this in the state of Georgia, right. Not necessarily in Donna's kitchen, but that was a lovely
show.
It
was fun, and it was just something that, obviously, it's a seasonal thing they do annually, and you know, the whole family was involved. The kids liked doing it. It was quite drippy, messy, good fun, and they taste good.
Since this is a time to talk about KHOI and how it operates, I will have to take my hat off to Gil, because we talked earlier about how you can access the KHOI website anywhere you live. Well, local talk shows are put up on the website either the same day or very close to the same day that they are aired, and they stay there because you can, if you know how to go through the little boxes, you can go back to
they're all archived.
Every single local talk show is up there, and for the last year, our shows have been archived by Gio, and he is wonderful to work with. If I make a little mistake in the text, it's repaired immediately. We figured out a system so I can upload it. He can get it, take care of it at home, and it gets up on the website within minutes often of the time he gets it.
Lots of good people putting this together, and thanks to Gio for keeping the Donalana Kitchen website up to snuff. We have all our old archives there, and recipes too.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. Paul Wearson and I are your hosts for today. Last August, the Iowa Director of Youth Development for 4-H was fired in a controversy over a policy for LGBTQ youth in 4-H. Throughout the fall, there was a series of articles in the Des Moines Register which looked at what happened. And just this past week, on Sunday, there was another article in the Des Moines Register that continued following the controversy in 4-H and detailed where diversity efforts stand now in this organization that is so important to Iowa youth. In addition, a national group produced a podcast about what happened in Iowa 4-H. KHOI reporter Gail Seiler has been following this story and brings us more on it today.
John Paul Chason Cardenas was the state director of 4-H, and one of his goals was to make 4-H more inclusive of all students, particularly those from marginalized groups. However, John Paul was dismissed from his position in August 2018, following months of turmoil over a proposed LGBTQ policy. In January, about 6 months after his firing by ISU, I interviewed John Paul about what happened, and since then, the National Young Farmers Coalition has followed up on this story and produced a podcast. In that podcast, which is available on the organization's website, John Paul was interviewed along with Jason Clayworth, an investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register, who has done a lengthy investigation of what happened. This is the opening 10 minutes of Broken Promises, 4-H's LGBT plus controversy.
This is the Young Farmers Podcast. I'm Lindsay Lesher-Shoot. If you didn't grow up with it, 4-H is quite a phenomenon, and its work goes way beyond the fair. It's about teaching kids of all ages how to become leaders. The organization, started in 1905, now has 6 million participants. It's administered by the USDA and organized by university extensions. 4-H has an expansive mandate. In 2017, it actually set a goal to, quote, reflect the population demographics, vulnerable populations, diverse needs, and social conditions of the country. It was part of an effort to make 4-H accessible to kids of all cultural and economic backgrounds. Jean-Paul Chazon Cardenas was hired as part of this campaign in Iowa. With innovative, culturally based programs, he doubled the participation of youth of color in the Iowa 4-H program. But when John Paul tried to include LGBTQ youth in the Iowa program by bringing new national USDA guidelines on how to make them feel comfortable in local clubs forward, he was fired. And following this controversy in Iowa, the USDA rescinded its own national guidelines on LGBTQ youth. Today, I'm speaking with Jason Clayworth, an investigative reporter from the Des Moines Register who has been covering this story. I'm also talking to John Paul Chazon Cardenas and Dr. Sunny Ramaswamy. To get started, Jason, can you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Jason Clayworth. I'm an investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register in Des Moines, Iowa.
I'm just wondering how you came to this story.
So myself and another reporter, Courtney Crowder, launched this review after our state fired its 4-H director. There were a lot of unanswered questions about why he was fired, and so we began looking at it. Ultimately, the Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, their executives made the decision to fire John Paul. The decision to fire him was based on, I've forgotten exactly the words that they used, but basically his inability to work well with the organization as a whole. Their reasoning has not been exactly clear, but when we look at the documents and what was going on at that time, their concerns were centered primarily on this issue of transgender youth participants.
So can you tell us just from the beginning, what was this policy around transgender participants in 4-H, and where did that come from?
Back in 1991, the USDA and extension leaders in the various states wrote a document that pushed the university extensions to become more diverse and multicultural. In 2015, 4-H headquarters were receiving a lot of questions about how to best include LGBT students in their local programming. And so with that...
And this is the national headquarters?
Yes, yes. And so with that, there was a working group put together of various leaders who were asked to adapt some of the Obama administration's suggestions on how to include gender identity rights into various policies. And so that group put together recommendations that ultimately were approved by the National 4-H Association and were posted as guidance on a federal website. And it's important to note that national website is part of the USDA. It was posted, you know, and some of the state organizations, including Iowa, picked that language up and those suggestions and began to review or implement them relatively quickly.
How many state organizations took that guidance and incorporated it into their own policy and practices?
You know, it was difficult for us to pinpoint exactly how widespread the document was used. It was only on the website briefly, like less than 2 weeks, if that. And so it was a relatively short period of time. What we do know is that the USDA removed those recommendations and then very shortly after sent notices to some states asking them to remove that information from their own state sites.
Do you have any sense of what led them to, you know, take down this guidance and in fact instruct states to remove it from their own sites?
Well, what we know is what was obviously what's been going on in the federal government in regard to the issue of transgender rights. The Trump administration has since worked to reverse some of those protections that were put into place under President Obama.
Is it unusual for an administration to remove policies, or is this sort of an unusual thing to happen, or is this not out of the ordinary?
In our review, and we asked dozens of our sources as we worked several months on this investigation, we could not find an example in the past decade where an advisory policy had been completely rescinded. And the USDA took the unusual step to send notices to the states that were using this policy, sending urgent messages, that's their word, urgent, to remove the policies from their state websites as well.
And what was USDA's reason for doing this?
So we spent several months contacting the USDA. We got one response, and they said that the guidance policy wasn't properly vetted. The policy that deals with transgender rights, however, said specifically that it had been approved by National 4-H headquarters, as well as this working group that had been put together, at least partly, to look at this issue in 2016. Our follow-up questions weren't answered about, you know, what was done incorrectly in this approval, and we've never gotten an answer to that. What we know from talking with our sources is that some of the highest management of USDA was involved in this issue and did guide the decision to rescind this policy. If you listen to the opponents of transgender rights in at least this policy, they will tell you that the federal government regulations, they believe, are illegal. And there are advocates who are quite adamant in their arguments that these provisions are unconstitutional. We could back up just a little bit. A year plus ago, the Iowa 4-H was looking at its inclusive policies. And that's really what John Paul was looking at. And so that was the context of what was going on in Iowa is you know, that we have had issues in the state where transgender participants in 4-H have met some difficulties in participating.
That podcast was produced and hosted by Lindsay Lusher Shute, who is co-founder of the National Young Farmers Coalition. After listening to the podcast, I spoke with Lindsay about why her organization thought it was important to follow up on this story of what happened in Iowa and at the national 4-H level.
The first thing I'd like to ask you is, how did you come to do this podcast? Why did you think this was an important issue to follow up on?
For a few reasons. Number one, USDA is the agency that we talk about the most at Young Farmers Coalition. It is the agency that we depend on to serve all of our farmers, all of our member farmers across the country. And our work since 2010 has largely focused on trying to make that agency serve all farmers better. When it comes to serving farmers, LGBTQ farmers, women farmers, it is incredibly important that the agency that is overseeing 4-H and programs across the country, that they are giving equal treatment and equal access to those programs to all individuals who are farming today or might be farming in the future. These farmers, many of them are coming to farming new, and they need support from the USDA. And some of them do identify as LGBTQ. And thinking of those farmers in particular, I want to be sure that when USDA is engaging with young people of all backgrounds, of all gender identities, that they are doing so fairly, and that agriculture in general, which, you know, in a rural setting, it can be a challenge for new people to sometimes break in or feel comfortable for a whole host of reasons, right? 4-H is oftentimes a young person's first exposure to agriculture, to growing things. And it is incredibly important that the organization, and the organization has recognized this itself, and it did so in the creation of these policies. 4-H needs to be a place where children of all gender identities are welcomed with open arms and are served fairly and equally with empathy. That is a responsibility of that organization. And to find out that this organization had, you know, taken a very responsible step in trying to address questions from parents and from educators across the country as to, you know, how can we ensure that these kids are treated fairly and that they can, you know, feel like they're part of it and are made to feel comfortable. You know, when this, you know, very responsible and reasonable policy was brought forward to the USDA and then sort of out of the blue rescinded, that just made me feel like the USDA wasn't doing its job. And we wanted to understand what exactly happened, both in D.C. and also in Iowa. I guess I certainly felt a, you know, degree of disappointment, right? Like, 4-H has such an incredible vision for how it can bring more young people into its work and activities, how it can serve the future leaders of the country, right? In rural America, in agriculture, and increasingly in suburban urban places too. It is really such an important vision. And I was also really pleased to see that the organization has, you know, embraced such a broad vision, such an inclusive vision, one with such heart and empathy, and that the state organizations and leaders had addressed the issue of transgender participation so fully in this way. So, you know, I think I was really pleased to see that, and, you know, just disappointed, I guess, is the best word for it, to see that, you know, the policy was rescinded so quickly without really much process at all. And it's unclear moving forward if that will be reinstated or sort of what's next. It's certainly sent such specific message to a group of young people who are already vulnerable, a group of families that, are trying to navigate, this is a family as well. So I think, my greatest feeling was just like, this was another opportunity for 4-H to become more inclusive, to really realize the vision that they've set for themselves and in terms of serving future youth in the country. And this really was a missed opportunity and not a message that young people need.
In your podcast, when John Paul read some of the positive responses, emails, I presume, he had received from LGBTQ youth who were seeing the beginnings of this policy, and then he also read some of the negative comments, it just really highlighted how much the protection and support for students of non-dominant social identities is needed, how much that support and protection for them is needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the thing that I really appreciated about John Paul as well is just a really uplifting the fact that this was, the kids didn't have an issue with this necessarily.
Right? Yeah, he said that,
this
yes.
This is something that was, more about the adults and what they were bringing to the conversation. To hear that this policy made a difference and would make them feel more comfortable in a local 4-H club. I mean, that is incredibly meaningful. And you're absolutely right, is exactly the reason why we benefit from having leaders with such empathy, such as John Paul, at the helm in youth organizations, just generally speaking, because, you need that sensitivity and that understanding and willingness to listen to kids who are vulnerable and ensure that we're meeting their needs.
What has been the, upshot of the podcast once it was put up on the website? Did you get any responses or any sense of how it was being heard by different people?
Our the Young Farmers podcast is covering a whole host of emerging issues in agriculture, and we have a very active listenership that, sends us comments and interacts with us on Instagram and the like. I think there was a feeling of surprise, definitely that this had happened, because there's an assumption, right, that the federal government, given that they are spending the public tax dollars, the public's money, are going to treat the public equally, right? That they are going to treat all kids that they are serving the same and really be aware and responsive to this type of issue. So I think that there was a surprise. I mean, obviously there's been a lot in the news about transgender individuals in the military and the like, so it's not as though people are unaccustomed to hearing about gender identity being something quite politicized, but I think that they were surprised that it had reached the USDA, to see that sort of national rhetoric had made its way into the space of agriculture, I think was a significant surprise for people. We certainly received notes of gratitude from a bunch of individuals, including some reporters who were just really pleased that we had continue to cover this. And, as you had just said, the story didn't really get a ton of coverage except for the Des Moines Register, right? It didn't, there weren't stories in the news about this in many other publications, locally or nationally. So I think people were just pleased that we were able to keep the conversation going. Yeah. I think the other thing that we got a little bit of pushback on was the fact that we didn't have a transgender individual actually speak on the podcast, about the specific issue. So I think that was another, piece of feedback that we received. No reporting is perfect, but we were really glad to have been able to tell this story. Transparency is incredibly important, and it's so important on the USDA and the federal level, and in particular, that young farmers just know what's happening.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've just been listening to an update from Gail Seiler on the the story about the firing of the director of youth development for 4-H a few months ago. But now we'd like to go to one of our favorite things to do on Local Talk is to preview community theater productions. Although it's almost outside our listening area, we cover most of the shows produced by Ankeny Community Theater because we know that people from other towns like to see them. Now, Don Com, who our listeners may know as the director of Ames Electric Services, will be on their stage in the upcoming production of Proof. Thanks for coming in to tell us about it, Don.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And Don, this is Paul, and I am a community theater guy myself, and so I am dying to hear about, and I thought I knew a lot of shows, but I'm not sure that I'm familiar with Proof. Tell me about it.
Well, Proof was written right around the year 2001. David Auburn wrote it, and it's an interesting play. I think they actually turned it into a movie at one time. It's about a young lady, brilliant young lady, that's struggling with math. And that sounds like a really boring play. Who wants to talk about math? But the way this thing is written is she struggles with when you get so smart, it's almost to the point of are you losing your mind? And so throughout this play, she is struggling with, as she gets smarter and smarter, is she getting smarter and smarter, or is she losing her mind? And she actually talks to her dad, who's there for part of the show and not there for the other part of the show. And there's a little cliffhanger in this, so you got to come and see it. But I play the father, and I'm also a math whiz. I did a bunch of work in my 20s that revolutionized mathematics. And the cast and the crew has really taken this on personally. If you come down there, some of the stuff that we have up on the walls and stuff are actual mathematical proofs that have been written over the last couple of decades.
So that right?
Wow. Oh, and there's a lot of – I don't say it's – there are some humorous parts, but it's more of a drama, I think, than it would be a lot of funny ha-ha type of stuff.
So Ankeny is really doing some stuff that is kind of challenging and off the track a little bit for what you normally see in community theater.
You bet.
That would be a real different kind of production. So that sounds kind of fascinating. Now, you've done a lot of things as actors here in town.
Yes, I have.
And I just – is it out on Abraham there, right?
That is correct.
I love that place. It's a very intimate theater. At the same time, there's all kinds of workshop area, and it's a beautiful facility. And, boy, the acoustics are good and very intimate theater. What's it like at Ankeny?
Ankeny is a little bit different. It's more of a personal space. Actors is a gem that is hidden away. You have to really know where you're going to find it, unfortunately. Yeah. For Ankeny, it's actually, I hate to say it, but it's a building inside of a strip mall. And it's kind of a little bit hard to find. You just come off of First Street, head down about a mile and a half, and it sits in this small mall. But it's much more intimate. I would say it's a smaller theater. Less storage, less entryway, a little bit parking is a little bit different than you would find at Actors. But the people there, like at Actors, care about community theater and really want it to do good.
Actually, you do more productions in Ankeny, I believe.
Yep. Both theaters basically have about five shows that they're trying to do in a given year. Both theaters are now trying to do one of these. I wouldn't call it a vignette, but it's a smaller. Let's do it. Take a weekend and do three or four, five productions of a single show. This happens to be one of those extra shows that Ankeny is doing called Proof.
And so, basically, you're talking about a one act, two act.
This is a two act show, two act play. It's got four characters, so it's the father, the daughter, the sister of the daughter, and then a gentleman who may turn out to be a boyfriend, but we're not exactly sure.
Oh, no, don't give it. No spoilers, Don.
No.
But But now, if you're coming, if all your fans are streaming down from Ames, they want to take the first exit, the first street exit.
That is correct.
And you keep going west until you see something, right?
Basically, you keep going west about a mile and a half. The best thing to do, I don't have the address memorized like I do with actors, but if you just look at Ankeny Community Theater, get it on your smartphone, and you can find anything.
Yeah, that's right. Who's that? Sarah. She'll get you there, right?
Siri, yep. Just Siri. Ask Siri where to go.
I have used the wrong terminology. Siri, yeah, not Sarah. My apologies. I'm frightened of her because she knows everything. You know,
absolutely.
But you can't hurt her feelings.
No, that's true. But I've heard her sort of correct people on the road.
Oh, yes.
And she gets a little uptight sometimes.
Yes.
Well, now, what's the production dates here?
So we open actually tomorrow night, Thursday, tomorrow night. Run Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then we have a noon matinee.
And what's curtain time on the evening shows?
7:30.
And so everyone's going to be ready to go, and you have a matinee when?
It will be on Sunday.
And then that's the run of the show.
Yeah, and what time?
That's the show. I believe that's at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
I better look, because if I don't show up, I come at the wrong time, it may disrupt when the show starts.
Well, the great thing about community theater, verified by my experience, number one, very often I did a lot of some things at the Drama Workshop in Des Moines. Down there, the Community Playhouse does the great shows, you know, the familiar shows, sure, the musicals, all that sort of thing. And then Drama Workshop did avant-garde, off-Broadway things that were more challenging. And at that time, there were only two groups in Des Moines. Now I think there are several theatrical organizations. They do a lot of things downtown at that club. And of course, you still love to be in Des Moines Community Playhouse, which produced Cloris Leachman.
Yes.
And in fact, their annual award is the Cloris.
Yes.
And there's a big tradition of community theater in Des Moines and in Ankeny and Webster City.
Yeah.
You know, Susan and I have done many shows promoting local theater, and there's some very good gems out there.
Yes, you know? Webster City and Boone.
Boone has one,
yes.
Sure.
And
so basically you're talking about – what I like about it is there's a group of people in every community who want to do theater. And when I say do that, not just be out on the boards acting, but all the crew work and all the volunteer work that it takes to put on a production. And I know, Don, that you have had the same experience as I've had, the marvelous camaraderie and family that develops during rehearsal.
Absolutely.
And you know, closing performance and takedown is bittersweet.
It is. You put a lot of your heart and soul into a show, all of the rehearsals, the late nights, getting that all taken care of. You build a strong relationship with the cast members and the crew. I learn a lot. We have a very good director in this show who's really good at building character.
Who is your director?
Michael Porsche.
Yes. Well, you know, there's a lot of crossover between Ankeny, or not a lot, but Michael Porsche has been down at actors and on the stage. He's really terrific actor.
Michael and I directed a show last year at Actors, and Michael and I were in a show together at Actors. And that show was interesting. It was called November. It was about an election of a president. Very, very funny show. And then you compare it to our current president, and it wasn't as funny anymore.
Hey, now, I wish we could go on all the time, but we're right at 7:54, so we're going to close the – well, Don, that's just great. Good luck to you. Break a leg.
All right. Thank you.
That's what we say in theater.
Please don't. I don't think the Ames Electrical Circus can handle it. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts for today, Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson. We spoke with Chris McClure, Mary Howard, Lana Noctegal, Donna Prisgintis, and Don Calm.
Now you can listen to today's Local Talk Show and any of our past Local Talk Shows online, our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. Stay tuned now for Democracy Now! At the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces on at 9 a.m.
Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was recording of a live concert by the Barn Owl Band, which will be playing tonight live.
Right here at the Pantorium.
Yeah.
And we're across from the Octagon, downtown Ames. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. And if you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us, 515-292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership. Do it today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoy the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again
on the radio.